Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Tuesday edition. I welcome back a fine guest. She is Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. She's a friend of mine. Maggie, welcome back to the big show.
Thanks, Mike. Wish I was here under different circumstances.
Yes, Maggie, you and I spoke last night. Let's start with the leaking issue before we get into the rights taken away from women issue. This leak, unprecedented by the court, and Justice Roberts has come out today and said, you know, there'll be an investigation. And the right is outraged about the leak, Maggie. So what's your opinion? The leak, please address that first.
Yeah, we talked about it at length last night. I think there's two theories that are operating right now. And one is that a clerk for one of the more liberal justices just couldn't bear it and thought the public had the right to know as soon as possible and leaked it. The other, which is a much savvier and Machiavellian option, is actually a conservative justice, perhaps Alito himself, orchestrated the leak to avoid a potential defection of likely either Amy Coney Barrett or Justice Brett Kavanaugh away from the majority that might either put the decision, that majority decision, out of reach and leave Roe in place in some form or another. That, I think, is a much juicier theory. And I think that there's some evidence that that may be the case, given some of the reporting that came out of the Wall Street Journal about a week and a half ago, which had some of these fact indicators about what Alito's decision was likely to be. It indicated that Alito was likely writing the majority opinion. And so if someone was talking to the Wall Street Journal and they had these facts a week and a half ago, you would tend to think that that would be someone from the winning side picking a friendly conservative leaning publication to give that information to. So I think those are the two operating theories. As you and some of your longtime listeners will likely remember, I clerked for a federal appeals court judge for the Seventh Circuit, which covers Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. The federal appeals courts are just one level down from Supreme Court, from the Supreme Court and Supreme Court clerks. And I attended conferences with Supreme Court clerks. I know many of them. Some of them, in fact, are colleagues of mine. And in general, I will just say this. I do not imagine a clerk ever doing this without the permission of the justice that they work for. It is just sacrosanct. When we work for these judges, they are our entire universe. And I worked for a conservative judge who was appointed twice to the federal bench by President Reagan. He and I did not share views on many things, but it would have not even ever occurred to me to insert my views or replace his judicial philosophy for my own views, or to do anything that would have undermined him as a jurist or the court's process overall. In this way, it is entirely unprecedented. I know that the Washington Post did clarify that the original Roe decision was, quote, leaked. But it was not in analogous circumstances. It was not while the case was still pending. It was mere hours before the actual final decision was going to be released to the public. So in an entirely not analogous. So the two things I'd say is that the prevailing theories are ticked off liberal clerk. I really don't buy that. The theory that I think makes sense to me based on my experience, the experience of colleagues of mine that have clerked for Supreme Court justices, is that likely one of the conservative justices, if not Alito himself, may have orchestrated the leak to try to shore up any waffling conservatives of that 6-3 conservative supermajority that we see on the Supreme Court.
My fine guest, attorney Maggie Dawn. Maggie, it is a draft that we've seen. This is not the final work project and not a final decision, at least not yet. Do you think that Roberts is out there trying to defend this? I mean, Roberts, not defend the leak, certainly, called for an investigation, not defend the ruling per se, but do you think Roberts is out there trying to defend the integrity of the Roberts court? Do you think he is worried about this ruling so overturning prior precedent that it undermines the entire confidence in the court, regardless of what the ruling is?
Yeah, so there's two questions that are embedded there. One is, what is Roberts' role as Chief Justice in terms of preserving the integrity of the court with respect to the leak and the fact that the opinion on substance overturns 50 years of precedence, of Supreme Court precedence, overturning Roe, which is a 1973 decision, as well as Casey, which was decided in 1992, 20 years after Roe. So dealing with the leak, to me, the leak is an existential threat to the integrity of the court and presents a very real threat to the balance of powers such that it is in our modern constitutional democracy and the independence of the judiciary. There is no doubt, I don't think there can be any reasonable question that the leak of the opinion, whomever did it, did so with an intent to affect the processes of the court and to whip up a political frenzy in the public. That is a deep violation of the norms and procedures of our court system. I know from my personal experience on the court and from talking with colleagues that justices and judges at the appellate level, which requires more than one judge making a decision, often are swayed and moved by colleagues' early drafts, that drafts evolve significantly, and that this is quite an intentional, deliberate part of the judicial decision-making process at the appeal and Supreme Court levels. This is such a deep violation of that, that as a law practitioner, as a lawyer, as an officer of the court, I am shocked by the leak itself. And the fact of the leak really, I think, speaks to the stakes here. I know that we'll spend some time talking about the implications of this decision, but any Democratic scholars, political scholars, those that sort of watch globally have made it very clear that erosions of women's reproductive rights that we have seen in the last 20 years are found in democracies that are failing, that are struggling, and that are teetering or tilting towards authoritarianism. The examples of that are Poland, Hungary, Brazil. The names of those authoritarian leaders are familiar to us, you know, Bolsonaro, Orban, right? So this is a real deep problem. The way that this decision came to the public is a very real and deep problem for our democracy. So I really believe that Roberts' term as chief will be forever marred by this leak. It's unrecoverable at this point. Candidly, every clerk would have printed off the draft opinion. How would you ever confirm if someone took a draft out of the building and passed it to a reporter? And by the way, I've looked at the PDF that's on the Politico story that broke, just to sort of see what the quality of the PDF is. It's very clear that it was printed and then scanned, that this was not say, a print to PDF, or that it was a clean electronic PDF that was passed. It was very clearly printed and scanned.
And why is that relevant?
Absolutely. And it that speaks to how someone would pass that document and hopefully in their mind cover their tracks. It would, you would do it in hard copy. And that's simply just not, that's not hard to fathom. And clerks, in my experience working for a federal appeals court and knowing former Supreme Court clerks, no one's searching our bags. The presumption that we will protect the institution that we swear an oath to protect, meaning the courts, is presumed. So I don't know if Robert's investigation is going to be fruitful. I would doubt that. Who knows? But I doubt that much will come of that. But the damage here is irreparable and permanent.
Maggie, some would say the impanelment of Gorsuch instead of Merrick Garland, the impanelment of Amy Coney Barrett, that these are all breaking with the court's norms. Would that be an ends that justifies the means? Certainly the right takes every ends they have to justify their means. Maggie, at some point, does the left just have to say that's how we play too?
I think the end of that is complete moral relativism in terms of how we protect democratic institutions. A race to the bottom where anything, any ends, whatever your ends are, if you believe in it strongly enough, any means becomes acceptable, is simply an argument that must be rejected by those of us who wish to preserve democracy governed by the rule of law. I think, and we've had this debate about Trump, right, as well, Mike, and that is, in my view, I think really ultimately what we're finding out are that many of these norms simply must be enshrined in law. We can no longer rely upon the actors themselves to behave in conformity with these longstanding norms and practices that help preserve the independent integrity of our institutions like the court.
She is attorney Maggie Dawn. She is a friend of mine. We'll come back with her. Maggie, I got lots more questions and perhaps even take some calls later in the hour at 844-967-2789. Come back with us. Roe v. Wade. Well, it's on the edge of being overturned, apparently, according to the draft documents. We'll talk more with Maggie Dawn, my fine guest.
If the issue were to come before me, if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed and the issue were to come before me, the first question would be the question that we've been discussing, and that's the issue of stare decisis.
I know the version of me. Is she perverted like me? Would she go
the devil's advocates? Because freedom!
Back to the devil's advocates radio show. Welcome back to my fine guest. The entire hour, she's co-deviling. She is Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, attorney at law, friend of mine. Maggie, last night you reacted in, you know, anger and outrage, I think were logical reactions. And I know you were feeling a little bit of it. And my role in our friendship is usually to be the sarcastic smartass that, you know, responds to your thoughtful statement with something sarcastic. And I thought to myself, if I say something snarky to my friend Maggie tonight, I'm going to get a throat punch right through the phone. So I restrained myself, Maggie. Anyways, I thought I'd point that out. I still don't want to get throat punched. Please be kind. But Maggie, I've got to ask, have you had a chance to digest any of the draft ruling, apparently drafted by Alito, and the conclusions it reaches legally? What's important to know about this conclusion?
Yeah, there's so much here to unpack, Mike, and I appreciate your restraint, my friend. And yes, you would probably be the receiving end of the verbal throat punch, as it were. But let's keep it nonviolent today. I mean, there's so much from the ruling that I want to point out, but let's begin with the most basic. In its first pages, it says, Roe and Casey must be overruled, and the authority to regulate abortion must be returned to the people and their elected representatives. So this is states' rights, right? And for anyone that has paid any attention to what's happened in our country since Reagan basically created this states' rights movement, is that that is the term that is used by every racist, misogynist, homophobic, religious zealot, right-wing freak show to justify oppression of people that don't share their own belief systems. So while justices of the Supreme Court may be able to write in refined language that seems to be language that is not violent, let's not mistake that. It is language of violence. What Alito means when he writes, Roe and Casey must be overruled and the authority to regulate abortion returned to the people and their elected representatives, what he is saying is that the decision to continue a pregnancy must be removed from a woman who will have to bear the child, and it must be given to a majority who is free to impose their moral judgments upon her. If that is now the rule in this country, it places so many other extremely personal decisions that sound in our individual autonomy at risk. And while Alito does take great pains in this decision to say that abortion is unique, it stands alone, I think many would argue that those arguments are easily rebutted. So again, while he's careful to say this is a unique act, abortion is treated alone, nothing in this opinion concerns any other constitutional privacy rights. Quote, nothing in this opinion should be understood to cast doubt upon precedents that do not concern abortion, meaning gay marriage, and that whole other raft of what we're going to call social sort of buzz issues of the day that the right loves to tout to, you know, stir up and lather up its knuckle-dragging base. Let's not forget that Alito was a dissenter in the same-sex marriage ruling and argued that, quote, the Constitution leaves that question to be decided by the people of each state. So while he's saying in one breath, abortion stands alone, this is the same jurist that under a differently composed Supreme Court would have found that there is no constitutional privacy right to same-sex marriage.
And let me pause you for just a minute, Attorney Maggie Dawn. As I spoke with you last night and I was characterizing others reporting, and I know you've had a chance to look now, I said effectively Alito didn't see any constitutional authority under the 14th Amendment. Effectively said, you know, Roe was bad law because there is no constitutional authority for these rights. And my fear, drawing a what I perceive to be a logical conclusion, is that does undermine the rulings on same-sex marriage, interracial marriage. I mean, it undermines a lot of rulings if there aren't constitutional rights except those enumerated by the originalist founding fathers, because a few things have changed since then.
Absolutely, Mike. The danger that this ruling represents for a whole wide swath of effectively privacy rights. Here's the important thing, just a couple of interesting facts here. I believe the word privacy appears in the original Roe decision just a ton of times, like well over 30 times. It appears in the Casey decision well over 20 plus times, right? It appears in Alito's decision 6 times. Now, if not a privacy right, I don't know what the right to, you know, consensual sexual relations in your home is. And so if simply because the word privacy doesn't appear in the Constitution, we now have to differently analyze all of these different autonomous decisions that really get to the nature of how we govern ourselves. That's really dangerous. And you and I share a few friends in common. One of them is our good friend Dominic, right? And what Dom and I have often advocated for, and I as an economist have economic reasons for this as well, is that human beings should also have the right to engage in legal prostitution, legal regulated tax prostitution, and consume whatever substances they want. And in fact, Alito addresses that in brief in his decision. where there is a lengthy argument made.
We don't have time for lengthy. We got 30 seconds, sister.
Well, I'll save it because I think it's really important to unpack that language. But he basically says if these privacy rights are appropriate for the Supreme Court to construe, then we have to start considering the use of illicit drugs and prostitution. And the answer is, yeah, of course you should. And perhaps those things shouldn't be made illegal. But let's talk about more of that after the break. There's a few other sections that I'd like to pull out.
Look at you, Radio Pro, throwing me to break. More Devil's Advocates and my fine guest, Maggie Dawn.
It is a precedent of the United States Supreme Court. It was reaffirmed in Casey in 1992 and in several other cases. So a good judge will consider it as precedent of the United States Supreme Court, worthy as treatment of precedent like any other.
Why you gotta mess with mine? Don't keep sweating what I do, cause I'm gonna be just fine. Check it out. If I wanna take a guy home with me tonight, it's none of your business.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for nasty women everywhere.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I got a fine guest. She is attorney Maggie Dawn. I appreciate you sticking around, Maggie. The Attorney General, great state of Wisconsin, Josh Call, is quoted in response to the Politico, the draft overturning of Roe v. Wade said, as long as I'm Attorney General, the Department of Justice will not be using its resources to investigate or prosecute alleged violations of the 170-year-plus-old abortion ban on the books. It's going to be a real problem, you know, depending on whether you've got a Democratic or a Republican administration. Jen Psaki from the podium today pointed out she thinks abortion would be illegal in 26 states. I pointed out Minnesota currently has no clear abortion laws on the books. Illinois, well, abortion's legal under state law. And of course, here in Wisconsin, Maggie, it would be immediately illegal if the Roe v. Wade is overturned, and Casey as well. So how should people react?
Yeah, it's really scary. So I think Jen, the press secretary's number is correct. 26 states have so-called trigger laws, which would immediately, the day the decision is finalized and issued, would make abortion illegal. Most of them are gestational limits. Some of them are closer to outright bans. Wisconsin's abortion law dates back to, you know, the pinnacle of our scientific understanding of when life begins, 1849, which is the year after we became a state. It also speaks to just this historic tradition of government really wanting to control women and women's bodies. So people should be really gravely concerned. In the chaos that would ensue, it is truly shocking. Justice Alito sort of wipes away one of the dominant factors why stare decisis or prior rulings should be followed, and that is reliance upon those prior rulings and how people organize their life. And he basically says in response to those reliance arguments, not so much. It's quite shocking, his view about this. And he basically says, and this is, he's quoting from Casey here, which is the 1992 decision that upheld Roe. He says, Casey wrote that people had organized intimate relationships and made decisions and choices that define their views of themselves and their place in society in reliance upon the availability of abortion in the event that contraception should fail, and that the ability of women to participate equally in the economic and social life of the nation has been facilitated by women's ability to control their reproductive lives. That's part of the reasoning from the Casey decision in 92 upholding Roe. He says in response to this is the only response in the opinion to that argument. But this court is ill-equipped to assess generalized assertions about the national psyche. What? It's not even a rebuttal of the argument. It's so stunning in its inadequacy. He eventually goes on to say, and this has been quoted a lot in the press, that this decision overturning Roe will allow women on both sides of the abortion issue to seek to affect the legislative process by influencing public opinion, lobbying legislators, voting and running for office. Women are not without electoral power. Well, thank goodness, Justice Alito. Thank you for that. Phew, we can vote. So that makes all of this moot. It's an insane argument.
Maggie, is the power of the vote, is what do you predict electorally? I told you last night, I think this is the turning point, the inflection point of the midterm elections. I don't think we have to see the final ruling. I think the rubber has already hit the road. Do you see this as a change of dynamic, a change of direction for the electorate? Do you think the American people will respond in an appropriate fashion and sort of rise up and throw the bums out, if you will?
From your lips to God's ears, my friend. But as has been pointed out by constitutional scholars and those that study democracy in action, and as well reported by the Brennan Center for Justice, what we have seen is not, oh, there's just this Roe v. Wade decision out there, and you know, it's this outlier. This has been a systematic march orchestrated by the far right that has never been about protecting fetuses or women's health. It was an issue that galvanized the base, that brought together the fiscal conservative portion or wing of the Republican Party with the evangelicals to accomplish a political goal, which was to create a hegemonic power for the right that couldn't be disrupted. Part of that whole strategy was to use abortion as this galvanizing issue, but part of that strategy has also been the erosion of voting rights and the rigging of our legislative maps to prevent the majority, who by any polling metric, the majority of Americans think abortion should be safe and legal on demand. And those erosions of voting rights, this rigging of our legislative maps, keep majorities out of power. In our state, the majority of our state votes consistently for Democratic candidates. And yet we have a Republican assembly and legislature that has been gerrymandered and rigged beyond all recognition, so that two-thirds of it is controlled by Republicans, even though a majority of Wisconsinites vote for Democrats.
So effectively, there will not be a legislative solution here in the state of Wisconsin, because we know that Republican leadership's already baked into the legislative maps. At the best case scenario, a Democratic governor like Tony Evers could perhaps veto further malfeasance, but he can't go back and change the 1849 law. That takes an act of the legislature.
Bingo, you've got it. And this same problem is playing out all across our country. Alito goes on to list the percentage of women in Mississippi, which is the state's laws who were that led to this decision, right? And then he cites that women are the majority of voters in Mississippi. Well, that's sure doing Mississippi women a whole heck of a lot of good. It's such an inadequate response when these sorts of fundamental rights are at issue. And I promised your listeners that I would read the quote that talked about these arguments about these are fundamental rights to govern ourselves, our personal autonomy. He wipes those off the board by saying simply this: attempts to justify abortion by appeals to a broader right to autonomy and one's concept of existence prove too much. Those criteria could license fundamental rights to illicit drug use, prostitution, and the like. Yes. And they're also the same arguments that protected same-sex marriage, interracial marriage, the right to homeschool your children, for those religious nuts that might be listening to your program right now. Those are all, there's no right to homeschool written in the Constitution, and yet you get to do that. So the implications are so broad. And let's be clear about what the bulk of that decision analyzes. He says that because the Constitution doesn't use the word abortion, it can only be imputed through the due process clause of the 14th Amendment. And for you to observe a right under the due process clause, it must be a fundamental right that is rooted in history and ordered liberty. Dear sir, I suggest that history is a very, very poor indicator of rights, of the protection of rights of the oppressed. That is not the appropriate understanding or metric to govern those who have been out of power, like women who only got the right to vote a mere 101 years ago. Women, and let's be clear about this, you know, U.S. law has only in very recent times afforded women full autonomy. For example, it wasn't until the 70s that in all states, women could get a credit card without their husband's permission. I'm not kidding you here. One of the historical legal scholars cited by Justice Alito is this gentleman whose last name is Hale. And this one is probably one of the most offensive elements of Alito's decision. This guy by the name of Hale that he quotes, Sir Matthew Hale, and he quotes these two treatises by Mr. Hale because he described the abortion of a, quote, quick child who died in the womb as a great crime and a great misprision. This is from Hale's Pleas of the Crown, which was published in 1736. In this same treatise, Hale wrote this: for the husband cannot be guilty of a rape committed by himself upon his lawful wife. For by their mutual matrimonial consent and contract, the wife hath given herself up in this kind unto her husband, which she cannot retract. This same genius told us that marital rape doesn't exist and can't be illegal. And now we're going to take this same genius's wise words about abortion? This is the history that Alito looks to define my right to control my body today. That is the abortion. A true perversion of judicial history and the way that we understand our rights. And let's not forget that the decisions and the historical precedent and understanding of abortion that was cited in the Roe and Casey decisions, Alito begins his decision by criticizing as constitutionally irrelevant discussions of abortion in antiquity. Well, if that's irrelevant, why is what this Hale idiot had to say in 1736 relevant? The answer is it's simply not, but it's convenient because this is the argument that Alito wants to forward.
My fine guest, Maggie Dawn, attorney at law. Maggie, I thought the U.S. Supreme Court and the laws of the United States were supposed to sort of evolve with societal norms. And you talk about the fact the vast majority of Americans, 70% approximately, believe that Roe v. Wade should be the law of the land. It's been the law of the land and should not be overturned as the law of the land. And so this ruling reflects perhaps the will of 30% of Americans. So how does that work? That seems exactly contrary to the way the courts are supposed to evolve with our nation.
Well, it's the direct result of the very work to suppress voters and to, again, keep the majority from setting the laws, from electing their desired representatives. Again, it was a perversion of the norms that we ended up with the Supreme Court so grotesquely lopsided. It is the same perversion that has destroyed and eroded the public's confidence in government institutions writ large, but in the courts especially. And this decision is yet another example of the erosion of public trust in the courts. Alito's analysis in this decision, in this draft opinion, addresses that or sets forth as an argument to overturn Roe, that neither Roe nor Casey ended the debate over abortion. And he says, well, because they didn't end the debate, I should overrule this. Well, that makes no sense. It's not like overruling it's going to end the debate. In fact, this will fracture our country even more. So so much of the reasoning and logic behind Alito's decision-making, in my view, doesn't withstand even the most minimal scrutiny.
Maggie, it doesn't stop here either in probability. My understanding is federally, Republicans, Joni Ernst from Iowa, already proposing a 6-week abortion ban as a federal law. So we can't codify Roe v. Wade. In fact, they're going the opposite direction if Republicans get their way. We're not done yet. This doesn't end with the overturning of Roe, does it?
Absolutely, Mike. You know, if these midterms go according to what the pollsters before yesterday were predicting, and Republicans take the House and the Senate, if a Republican president is elected in 2024, HB1 and S1, the first bills to hit the floor in either the House or the Senate, will be probably 6-week abortion bans, which, make no mistake, effectively ban all abortions. Why? Because how many women think if they miss or have one irregular period, oh, I must be pregnant? That's simply not the way menses work. And in fact, you know, as Alito is saying, the court doesn't have the authority to weigh these important public policy arguments about autonomy and women's health. Well, the fact of the matter is that most of the arguments that abortion ban proponents put forward are medically unsound arguments.
Maggie, come back. Explain that concept more. More Maggie Dawn, more devil's advocates on the other side.
The devil's advocates, never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I got a fine guest. She stuck around the entire hour. I really appreciate it. Maggie Dawn, attorney at law. We will get to some phone calls, but Maggie had a few more points before I was so rudely interrupted with commercial breaks and trying to make a few bucks. Maggie, the floor is yours.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, the rationalizations for these abortion bans, and they're just factually inaccurate. Most of these laws are literally littered with medically inaccurate terminology. And, you know, the scariest part is that now any of these bans will be subject to only a rational basis review, which basically means anything goes, regardless of what the intent is. And Alito lists some of the good rational bases that will pass muster. Protection of maternal health. Well, anybody that knows anything about this stuff knows that that's garbage. Abortion is safe if done properly. Elimination of barbaric medical procedures. Barbaric is defined by whom? A bunch of white dudes in Mississippi? Great, that's helpful. Preservation of integrity of the medical profession. Most doctors I know, again, think abortion should be legal, safe, and on demand. And here's the thing, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she was getting confirmed, said that it is essential for women to control their reproductive lives, that is how we can fully participate in this democracy. Well, here's an abortion ban proponent, one of the sponsors of the Texas ban, who said women can control their reproductive lives without access to abortion. They can do so by refraining from sexual intercourse. Yes, this is not equal treatment under the law. It's unequal treatment. Senator Kamala Harris asked Brett Kavanaugh this at his confirmation hearing. Can you think of any laws off the top of your head, Judge Kavanaugh, that give the government the power to make decisions about the male body? He replied, I'm not aware of any right now. This is sex discrimination. The only way that a woman can participate in a democracy fully is when we have complete autonomy over our bodies, period, end of story. That's all this is about. If this can be regulated by states based upon whatever that state's moral decision-making might be through, again, laws enacted to oppress minorities and keep them from voting, to keep women from voting, to keep older people from voting, liberal people from voting, then what's next? It's so unprincipled that it shocks the conscience. And again, this decision relies upon our nation and England's history of regulating and criminalizing abortion. And I would simply offer you, to anyone that's listening, that again, history is a most dangerous guide when it comes to defining the essential rights, the fundamental rights of groups that have been historically oppressed. And that is the guide that Alito offers us. It is simply inadequate and inappropriate in a modern democracy.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Try to sneak a few phone calls in here at 844-967-2789. Appreciate your patience. Beginning with Angie from Monroe. Say hi to my friend Maggie Dawn. Still there, Angie? Give Angie another shot later. Tom from Madison. Say hi to Maggie Dawn.
Hey, Maggie. You are a phenomenal guest. Thank you so much for doing this.
Of course, my pleasure.
Oh man, Yes, as you know, Michael, I have a couple of medical people in the family, and before my sweetheart left for work today, she turned me on to a study from the University of California, San Francisco, and it's called Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health. And it goes into a whole bunch of consequences that happen when women are turned away from an abortion clinic. Basically, the amount of household poverty goes up. Women are not likely enough to have enough money to cover basic living expenses like food, housing, and transportation. It lowers her credit score, increases her amount of debt, and all kinds of things like bankruptcies and evictions. Women who are turned away from abortions also are more likely to end up staying in an abusive relationship that otherwise they wouldn't do. They're more likely to be raising children alone. There's also some serious health problems that that go along with this as well. And it just seems like the pro-lifers are just only pro-unborn life. And it's basically just a rallying thing to fire up the base. And it's disgustingly immoral.
If they really cared about lives, they'd protect them after they came out of the womb, wouldn't they?
Well, they certainly would consider that. My fine guest, Maggie Dawn, for just a few more minutes. Maggie, Ron Johnson, I believe yesterday, was quoted saying something to the effect, or at least I saw the quote yesterday, that, you know, women's health care is not really affected by abortion. That very same man today is quoted as saying, apparently he thinks that the vaccines are causing AIDS. So consider the medical expertise of U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Consider the source. Maggie, quick thought, and then we'll try to sneak at least one more caller in at 844-967-2789. People in the state of Ohio are voting in a primary election today. They get to react in real time. What would you expect? I mean, this is not the final determinant election for the U.S. Senate, but Rob Portman's seat is being vacated. And we got guys like J.D. Vance and Trump couldn't get it right either, but the other guy going against him. And then we got someone like Tim Ryan over on the Democratic side, but that is a very important seat. If the Dems are going to pick up a seat, it starts today. Maggie, what's your thought on that race?
Really does, too. And let's not forget, it was some Ohio representative that just in the past week got up on the Ohio Assembly floor and said that a child raped by her father should be forced to carry that baby to term. I'm going to repeat that. Someone on the floor of the Ohio House of Representatives within the past 2 weeks said that a child that is the victim of incest raped by her father should be forced to carry that baby to term. I cannot imagine a more profound loss of personal autonomy than that. So Mark, the guy in Colorado, I'll just say this, the guy in Colorado can't be forced to make a gay wedding cake, but I can be forced to make a baby. I don't know about you, but that makes no damn sense to me.
Mark, I can give you like 30 seconds to say hi to our mutual friend, Maggie Dawn.
Hey, Maggie, go ahead and be the goddess of divine retribution nemesis. Why does Alito ignore the Ninth Amendment, which says just because it's not enumerated in the Constitution, the people don't have that right? That is clear to me he is ignoring that. And why do these Republicans who embrace Ayn Rand say, oh, the majority is tyranny, yet under abortion, if the majority of people in the state can say, well, we don't want abortion here, so you have to bear this pregnancy, why is that not tyrannical, making that woman, you know, go through that pregnancy, which might kill her?
Got to react quickly, Maggie.
That's the whole problem. Hypocrisy reigns supreme. And by the way, Alito mentions the Ninth Amendment once and then never mentions it again.
Maggie Dawn.
Mark, it's ridiculous.
My fine guest, perhaps the best one I've had all day. Maggie Dawn, thank you so much. Come back, the happier happy hour. Dom joins next.
I drank beer with my friends.
No man is above the law.
That's the issue of stare decisis.
Sometimes I had too many beers.